welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we're doing a public affairs roundup. KMUD News has been busy the last 2 days with evacuation orders and warnings in both Mendocino and Humboldt counties, and I look forward to returning to our normal news stories tomorrow, fire activity permitting. We have audio from the Mendocino and Trinity County Board of Supervisors, along with the Rio Del City Council. But first, some local updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off with a silver alert, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office is asking for the public's assistance with locating a 77-year-old at-risk missing person, James Robert Jaworski. Jaworski was released from a local hospital on July 7th at approximately 10 p.m. He was picked up by an Uber and expected to be dropped off at his residence in the 2100 block of Terra Vista Place in McKinleyville. According to his family, Jaworski never arrived home. Jaworski is described as a white male, 5'7", weighing approximately 190 pounds, with gray hair and hazel eyes. He was last seen wearing a blue and gray jersey. He was not wearing pants or shoes at the time of his disappearance. The California Highway Patrol is issuing a silver alert. Anyone who has seen Jaworski or has information regarding his whereabouts is urged to contact the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-445-7251. Also from the Sheriff's Office, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office of Emergency Services, in conjunction with CAL FIRE, the National Weather Service, and PG&E, invites community members to attend two upcoming public meetings focused on wildfire preparedness, fire safety planning, and evacuation readiness through the Know Your Zone program. These informational meetings will provide residents with valuable resources and guidance on preparing for wildfire emergencies, the county alert and warning systems, understanding evacuation zones, and staying informed before and during an emergency. Meeting dates and locations are as follows. In Garberville, Wednesday, July 22nd, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Garberville Public Library at 715 Cedar Street in Garberville. The other meeting is in Willow Creek on Thursday, July 23rd, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Willow Creek Community Services District at 135 Willow Road in Willow Creek. Representatives from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, Special Services Division, and personnel from CAL FIRE, the National Weather Service, and PG&E will be present. Attendees will have the opportunity to learn about wildfire preparedness, evacuation procedures, emergency notifications, and the importance of knowing their designated evacuation zone. Next, from the office of U.S. Senator Alex Padilla and with local impacts. Today, U.S. Senators Alex Padilla and Martin Heinrich and U.S. Representative Jared Huffman urged the U.S. Government Accountability Office, also known as the GAO, to investigate the Trump administration's proposed agency consolidation within the Department of the Interior. The lawmakers demanded answers about whether the consolidation would undermine the independent offshore safety oversight Congress established after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill and leave workers, communities, and taxpayers at greater risk. The letter follows an announcement from the Trump administration in April that it is consolidating the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management and the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement to create the new Marine Minerals Administration, while proposing draconian cuts to the Interior Department in its fiscal year 2027 budget request. The lawmakers concluded the letter by requesting GAO investigate the creation of the new Marine Minerals Administration and the steps that the Trump administration is taking to ensure that the agency can properly oversee deep-sea mining efforts to prevent another disaster like Deepwater Horizon. And now to our public affairs roundup. This is KMUD News. Today's broadcast is going to bring you audio from recent local government meetings that have occurred this week. We'll start off with the Mendocino Board of Supervisors and two staff reports that caught our attention. Here are two reports from the Mendocino County Resource Conservation District. Starting with plans from their forestry program on widespread fuel reduction to reduce wildfire risk.
My name is Doug Turk. I'm the Forestry Program Manager at the Resource Conservation District. Our program over the last several years has implemented or is currently implementing about $18.3 million of large forest health and wildfire resilience grants throughout the county. For example, the CAL FIRE, the first line, we are implementing a large project at the Leonard Lake Reserve and Montgomery Woods State Park area, about 2,000 acres of thinning and prescribed burning. We also have a CAL FIRE wildfire prevention grant for just under $1 million that we're submitting tomorrow, in fact. We are working with the State Coastal Conservancy to implement a large wildfire Ukiah Hills project to reduce wildfire risk in that area. And we have another approximately $9 million of projects in pipeline with CAL FIRE and the Coastal Conservancy. All these grants, we work closely with other agencies such as CAL FIRE, large landowners throughout the county, local fire districts, the Fire Safe Council, and so forth to develop these projects. Over the past several years, we've implemented about 2,400 acres of fuel reduction projects, and we have another about 2,700 acres planned in the coming years that are actually funded. And then we have another currently unfunded but in the pipeline of about 1,700 acres. We also have a small landowner support program. We support both the Natural Resource Conservation Service EQIP program as well as the North Bay Forest Improvement Program, where we work with smaller landowners to provide general technical assistance, forest management plans. We will develop specific project treatment plans for those landowners. And then we also help them get cost share funding to actually implement those projects. So over the past several years, we've implemented a total of about 530 acres of small landowner projects and provided a total cost share award of a little over $1.2 million.
Next from the Mendocino Board of Supervisors meeting is a staff report from the Mendocino County Resource Conservation District's Water Resources Program, including information on a cannabis restoration grant.
Good morning, Supervisors. My name is Mark Donahue, and I'm the Water Resources Program Manager. I'm going to talk briefly about a couple of recent accomplishments and then go over a few of the projects we're proud of that span some of your districts. Over the past year, we secured $3 million for the program. We implemented three projects totaling 535,000 gallons for water storage. In terms of restoration planning, we've advanced stream restoration and water conservation on commercial cannabis farms, and we've upgraded or decommissioned 4 miles of rural roads. And finally, in terms of fisheries restoration, we feel that the projects that we've been doing over the past 5 or 10 years has helped lead to the recovery of the salmon population in Mendocino County. In 2024-25, there were 30 adult salmon found in the county. One of the projects we have is working on tribal climate resilience in the Russian River watershed with the Hopalong-Banapomo, Potter Valley Tribe, and Giddyville Rancheria. We're trying to help them become more climate resilient through water and energy efficiencies, solar power, and greening activities. And the main work streams include clean energy feasibility studies, demonstration projects related to biochar and home weatherization, and workforce development. We are working on sustainable water systems in the South Fork Eel in a first-of-its-kind CDFW cannabis restoration grant program awarded at Happy Day Farms in Laytonville. We are helping to implement three large volume rainwater tanks at 100,000 gallons each, which allows cannabis cultivators to use that water as opposed to pumping water from the stream. We're working on stream flow enhancement in the Navarro River for salmon and steelhead. In partnership with the Nature Conservancy and Trout Unlimited, we're helping to increase water security for land stewards and fish. We have a rural residential off-stream storage and forbearance program around 58,000 gallons, where the landowners agreed to forbear pumping up water from the stream in, from July to October. And finally, with the county, we are working on several partnerships for monitoring, cleanup, and education efforts. We have QZ Mussels in Mill Creek, where we're testing water and water quality monitoring. We have the Russian River cleanup, and we have the Covelo cleanup. Thank you for your time.
We move now to the Trinity County Board of Supervisors meeting, where the U.S. Forest Service provided updates geared towards wildfire protection.
We will now hear item A2, receive an update from the U.S. Forest Service representatives regarding matters of interest to Trinity County. Welcome.
I have a long list today. I'll try to summarize it. But first, I'm just going to start off with fire updates. In the last couple of months, we've had roughly like 5 fires due to lightning and whatnot, and they've kept them all under an acre. The biggest one got to 4 acres. So that's due to all the training preparedness that the folks have done up here. And we went into fire restrictions last week. So we've really hit the fuels peak emergency action up there hard. We had those LOPs, or the limited operating procedures, were in place, and they've been lifted. So now we've been up there, we've roughly had 40 to 50 folks up there with our resources, and then a lot of other groups. We've also had, when we go into like these high fire danger, the North Ops brings in resources and sends them, and we've been using those crews to help up there with that work. So it's just something, they're waiting for fires, and when there's not, we got them working doing fuels work to help reduce the fires. So we've roughly, like, since that's lifted, got about 60 acres completed. The total area of fuels reduction is around 800 acres that we'll be working on. We're going to be having AmeriCorps crew coming in to help with some of that. We got Cal Fire helping in, and then a couple contracts in with the Watershed Center. So that'll be continuing. We'll get as much done as we can this year, and then it'll go on for the next couple of years. Some of the other projects, we have a lot of projects going on. I'm pretty impressed with what Tara has going up here. So we're continuing with South Fork Mountain Fuel Break, the North Trinity Community Risk Reduction, Big Ranch Community Risk Reduction, Junction City Community Risk Reduction, the Wildwood Forest Resilience, and the Weaverville Fuel Break. So that's a big list. Done my best to keep the ball rolling as I've been here, and it seems to be moving right along. So
good.
From our civic culture, so it's the South Fork Mountain Fuel Break, NEPA was signed, I believe, last week, and fuels work has already started up in that project. We're at limited capacity, or not limit, maximum capacity, more or less. So the Six Rivers has started the work, and then we'll be coming in behind them doing work also. We're also looking this summer to begin some road resurfacing and restructuring up in the Carrell Bottom area on the 47 road. Big Ranch and North Trinity, the planning efforts are starting to get wrapped up, so we're getting close on that. We have to do a lot of planning before we can go into the action, but we're getting there. The fuels contract was submitted for some work north of Hiapom community, which is going to help improve that fuels conditions and help protect that community out there.
That was the U.S. Forest Service in Trinity County providing an update at this week's Board of Supervisors meeting. Last for this public affairs roundup is the City of Rio Dell and their July 7th City Council meeting. Police Chief Joshua Finney gave a presentation on a grant his department was awarded from the California Highway Patrol. The grant is a Cannabis Tax Fund grant funded by Prop 64, which sets aside funds for local police departments to combat impaired driving while using cannabis.
Back in January 20th, the council approved a resolution 1658-2026 authorizing the submission of a grant application to the California Highway Patrol Cannabis Tax Fund grant for salaries and benefits, health education, for training and equipment related to the enforcement of impaired driving. Some of the things that are covered under this grant are, like I said, requested services, equipment, supplies, direct support of this grant, the salaries and benefits for officers to come in on overtime and do extra enforcement opportunities, drug evaluation and classification program courses, such as extra DUI and drug recognition courses for the officers, equipment such as a TruNarc device to help test various substances and identify what they are without exposing officers to them. And then again, public education going out to schools and educating people. Yeah. We initially had requested $160,000 out of the $500,000 cap allowed by our city. We have been approved for $108,178.75 for this upcoming fiscal year. I apologize for this not making the agenda normally. We received notification from this organization on July 3rd. We had 10 days to obtain acceptance from council and respond if we were ordered to accept this grant. So I'm requesting tonight the resolution 1676-2026 be adopted by the council. So we
ask for a motion to, I'm asking for a motion to adopt resolution number 1676-2026 accepting the Cannabis Tax Fund Grant Program from CHP.
So moved.
Second.
Happy to second. Second. Motion carries 5-0.
The Cannabis Tax Fund Grant was passed by the Rio Del City Council unanimously. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Two California detention centers are sold to the Department of Homeland Security for $1 billion. KPFA's Lauren Schmidt reports.
A coalition of immigrant rights advocates organized caravans from the Greater Los Angeles area to California City in Kern County, urging officials to reject Core Civic's business license and site review applications. They argue the city's approval of the business license violates its own municipal code and should be overturned.
Today's a big day. Today's a really big day.
That was Michelle Dunker of No Concentration Camps, California. She says 80 people traveled to California City to rally ahead of today's hearing.
To express our dismay and the culmination of that fight to now.
The site in question is operated by Core Civic and is one of 8 ICE detention centers in California. Core Civic signed its contract for the California City Detention Center in 2025. But in June of this year, an appeal was filed by Jahan Lanier, a managing attorney with the Immigrant Legal Resource Center and spokesperson with Dignity, Not Detention, a coalition challenging the city's approval of Core Civic's business license.
That is correct. Our organization filed these appeals of 2 California City approvals of applications that the private prison corporation Core Civic submitted.
She argues that the property is not zoned for an immigration detention facility and says Core Civic should have been required to obtain a conditional use permit before opening.
Instead, they applied for a business license and a site plan review minor, which are sort of like, you know, I'm going to open a restaurant. I want a business license, or I'm not going to. Yeah, something very minor, and this allowed them to bypass a lot of the scrutiny and also just public transparency that would be required under California City's own rules for a project of this magnitude.
The city manager may allow Core Civic's business license to stand. However, Dignity, Not Detention, argues the approval should be overturned.
We're just trying to make sure the city is aware of all of its mandatory duties to enforce its own code. And that's why we brought these appeals.
Speaking at today's hearing in front of Sean Grayson, the hearing officer and city manager, Grizel Ruiz, the senior managing attorney with ILRC, said the appeal is about more than zoning, arguing that detention centers have broader impacts on the surrounding community, pointing to Kern County's large Latino population, which, according to the latest census, stands at 56%.
This detention center also exposes nearby immigrant communities to higher risk of arrest and detention.
A facility a third of the size, would make residents near California City over six times more likely to be detained by ICE.
Ruiz also pointed to concerns over alleged medical neglect and conditions inside the privately operated immigration detention facilities.
They found delays in critical surgeries, people going without important medication, and requests for medical care that were entirely ignored. Separately, a federal lawsuit was filed where a federal district court judge ordered an independent monitor to monitor medical care, access to attorneys, and temperature-appropriate clothing because the federal court had found that conditions were so bad. Medical neglect also included people suffering from an untreated foot ulcer that risked amputation, a life-threatening congenital heart condition that would lead to sudden cardiac arrest, and these are just a few examples that came from that specific case.
CoreCivic, which has faced hundreds of lawsuits over conditions at some of its facilities, disputed the coalition's claims during today's hearing.
My name is Dan Struck. I represent CoreCivic. I also, just so you know, CoreCivic is defending a lawsuit that has been brought by the same organization that is issuing the appeal. All of these issues are before the federal court, and they're being disputed by CoreCivic.
CoreCivic argued that the site has long been approved for correctional use. Company representatives said the facility was originally proposed in the late 1990s, and the site had previously been leased to the California Department of Corrections. But CoreCivic told the hearing officer it secured an ICE contract in 2025 and applied for a new business license shortly afterward, although it wasn't approved until February 2026. CoreCivic continued its detention operations, but argued that its existing land use approvals remained valid.
I did want to point out that there has never been any ambiguity as to the use of this facility. The city allowed CoreCivic to use this facility as an immigration detention facility for several years.
CoreCivic asked the city manager to deny the appeal. Dignity Not Detention responded by defending its legal standing and reiterating its arguments that the city's approval violated local law. City Manager Sean Grayson did not make an immediate decision.
I'm going to take this under submission, and I will release a written response with my findings. It'll come within the next 10 business days, although I anticipate it'll be less time than that.
But the appeal to the city manager could soon become moot, as CoreCivic has just announced plans to sell two of its California detention centers directly to the Department of Homeland Security, a move that could change the legal landscape surrounding the case and the future of immigration detention in California. To learn more about the sale and what it could mean, we spoke with CalMatters border and immigration reporter Wendy Fry, who broke the story.
Yes, so that is true that Monday, CoreCivic announced this huge sale of the two largest immigration detention facilities in California to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. The deal worth about $1.5 billion, according to CoreCivic. They estimate that they will get net proceeds of approximately $1.1 billion from that, from selling the Otay Mesa Detention Center in San Diego and the California City Detention Facility in Kern County.
Fry says when she asked the Department of Homeland Security to explain the purchase, the agency pointed to California's sanctuary policies, arguing they have hindered federal immigration enforcement efforts.
And so the Department of Homeland Security said, we asked why. Why did you purchase these properties? This is a huge amount of money. What are you looking to accomplish here? And what they said back to us is, unlike in states like Florida and Oklahoma, ICE cannot rely on local, state, and county partners for detention space in California. The state sanctuary politicians continue to push legislation to outlaw or make private prisons financially infeasible. Now, with federal ownership of these detention centers, which are crucial to the ICE's detention network on the West Coast, ICE retains the detention capacity needed to arrest, detain, and remove and they're using their words, of course, here. This is not the way I describe people, but they're using the words illegal aliens in their quote. So it's, I think it's very important to see that their reasoning for doing this, right, is they want to circumvent the local, state, and county regulations that have been put into place to put oversight over ICE.
Fry said the move is unprecedented, but she notes it comes after Congress approved a budget reconciliation package that dramatically increased funding for immigration enforcement, leaving the Department of Homeland Security with an equally unprecedented amount of money to expand detention capacity. She says the deal also contains concerning language that may serve another one of President Trump's agendas.
One very interesting thing about the purchase agreement that I was reviewing earlier this morning is it references a law aimed at giving DHS the power and authority to detain what they describe as terrorists. So not even specifically focused on immigration, but possibly, you know, expanding that beyond, you know, people who protest ICE have been described as terrorists by this administration. So they are, yes, we are in an unprecedented era, and I've never seen anything like this in all the years covering immigration.
Groups challenging CoreCivic's California City facility are questioning the timing of the sale, as they are still contesting the company's business license. They fear transferring ownership to the federal government could further limit state oversight. The concern comes as California Attorney General Rob Bonta continues investigating conditions inside the state's 8 detention facilities, describing them as, quote, cruel, inhumane, and unacceptable. Michelle Dunker with No Concentration Camps California says today's caravan was about more than just one hearing.
Today has been a huge escalation, and in terms of how the federal government is engaging with our state and local law. This is their way of saying it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you want to have inspections, that you do not want to have people living in inhumane conditions. You do not want to have concentration camps. Your state's purview and your vote is of no value. And if you want to protect democracy in our country, these are the moments where your voice, your ability to educate and get involved in the fight matters more than ever before.
While the city manager considers the appeal, a separate planning commission meeting is also underway to examine whether CoreCivic's operation comply with the city's municipal code. Advocates argue that if the federal government takes ownership of the facility, it could further complicate or limit local oversight. For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Frederico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. KMOD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMOD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located in the unceded territory of Sinkione, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.